C-13. Stevenson Farm, Eastview, Colorado.
Oh my God, Emma yelled when she caught sight of Clark. His nose was badly bent out of shape, and almost his entire face was enveloped in a bloody crimson mask.
The short story is that I ran face first into an invisible wall, Clark said, preempting the inevitable questions. A force field.
Are you okay? Emma asked. Clark nodded slightly, moving his neck muscles no more than he had to. He then cracked his lower jaw back into place with his hands. This hurt for a second, but it made speaking far less painful.
And don't worry, there was no blood on the floor or walls or anything else when I left.
After inspecting Clark's facial injuries, Emma glanced into the back seat and saw Rooster.
So Walker is gone?
She asked, deducing as much, but keen to be sure.
He was taken?
Yeah, I heard him talking to Crab. I opened his bedroom door, but then there was a flash and a massive force threw me back against the wall on the other side of the hallway. The dog was going apeshit, and this weird humming or buzzing sound started. The door stayed open, but there was a white light. Then I heard Walker again, talking to them. And then everything was quiet. No humming, no buzzing, nothing. I ran towards the light in the doorway, and that was it. Bang. Face first. Walker's computer was dead, but I don't know exactly when it died. How much did you see on Crab's interview feed?
Nothing, Dan said. Walker was there for a few seconds, but there was no flash or anything. It just cut out. One second he was there on the right side of the screen with Crab on the left, and the next second it was Crab on one side and an empty black square on the other. That's what Tara and Timo said, anyway. Me and Emma felt it in our necks again, the worst yet, so we didn't see anything. The last thing I remember was Walker saying, "Joe, at last." And then it hit me like a brick had fallen onto my neck from the top of a tower.
Clark thought for a few seconds.
So no one has any reason to suspect that something happened to Walker? That means we found something out. The messengers are keeping a close eye on everything. But that no one else learned anything. I'm pretty sure my nose is broken in at least two places, and it sounds like you guys had a rough time too. But this could have ended a lot worse.
And you definitely positively got all of the security camera footage? Emma asked. The part when they came will just be a flash, but obviously the part when you arrive will be there.
100%, Clark confirmed. I've got all the memory cards in my pocket, I've got the dog, and I'm still alive. Now we need to hurry up and get the hell out of here.
Emma hurried to the car and returned quickly with a small first aid kit.
You can't go home looking like that, she said, handing him the box.
Clark opened a pack of antiseptic wipes without looking at the label and wiped the blood from his face. He groaned and grimaced more than a little at an extreme stinging sensation he hadn't expected, having not realized that they weren't regular baby wipes. With the blood gone, the extent of the injury to Clark's nose became even clearer. Dan didn't say anything about it. There would have been no point. But he did offer to drive Clark home.
Thanks, man, but I'm good, Clark said. It's a lot less painful for me to drive than it would be for me to get out of this car and get back in on the other side. My back, my shoulder, and especially my ribs took a serious hit when the initial force threw me against the wall. Those fuckers don't take any prisoners when they're putting up their force fields, I could tell you that.
Clark rolled up his window in a clear sign that it was time to go. He let Emma turn her car around to lead the way home. Despite the craziness of the last half hour, Dan's mind turned towards California as Emma drove towards Birchwood. Clark tailed them until an unfortunately timed traffic light change created a break between their cars, which was filled by a few other vehicles, but they knew he wasn't far behind. Emma didn't say anything at all until they reached her driveway, which Dan would have registered as more than a little unusual had his mind not been fully occupied with so many other things.
I'm going to get Rooster out of the car and take him into my house as soon as Clark gets back, she said, getting out of the car to wait for their arrival.
Dan walked around to her side of the car and leaned back against its door.
Are you okay? He asked. This is a lot to deal with, she said, also leaning back and gazing up at the stars.
Yeah, I guess I've had a few quieter Wednesday nights, Dan quipped. Emma smiled without laughing and turned to face him. The smile then faded as she shifted her feet, gazed into his eyes, put her hands on his cheeks, and softly kissed his lips. Softly. Unexpectedly. Perfectly. The revving of Clark's approaching car broke the serenity of this moment too soon, leaving Dan staring dumbly at Emma and wondering if this crazy Wednesday night could even be real as she turned towards the increasing noise and accompanying headlight beam. She then squeezed Dan's hand and looked at him again. "I'm scared," she said, uttering those words for what he thought must have been the first time in all the time he'd known her. "And when I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, I don't want to keep wasting today's." As Dan McCarthy looked into Emma Ford's eyes, he was feeling a lot of things. Scared wasn't one of them. Clark's car pulled into the McCarthy's driveway, at which point Emma made an immediate move to get Rooster from the back seat. Standing alone, Dan then turned towards the sudden sound of a fist knocking quickly and repeatedly on glass. He saw Tara standing at Emma's window, grinning like an idiot, and pointing two fingers at her own eyes before gesturing them towards Dan. "I saw that." He didn't reply, instead turning to help Clark out of the car. Rooster was understandably quieter and less energetic than normal as Emma led him inside, but he looked calm enough, certainly compared to the manic state they'd found him in after the messenger's first intervention at Walker's cottage a year earlier. "Your nose is really messed up," Dan said, no longer able to keep this thought to himself, as Clark slowly stepped out of the car.
"It was like a fucking wall," Clark lamented. "Just absolutely solid, and I ran right into it face first because I didn't even know it was there."
"Are your teeth okay?"
Clark opened his mouth and felt around to check, which obviously meant that they were.
"Seems like it. My forehead took a bit of a hit, but my nose definitely bore the brunt of it, because I was lurching forward into the room. Seriously, man, if this was you, you'd still be squealing like a pig."
Dan shrugged. "So what did you hear Walker saying the second time anyway? When you said he was talking to them?"
"You know when you hear stories of what one guy says when another guy is holding a gun to his head right before he's executed?"
Clark said.
"And you know how you can never be sure if it actually happened like that? Well, this did happen, because I heard it. He said, 'Do it, and at least finish the job this time, you bug-eyed sons of bitches.' That was the last thing he said. Those things were right there in his room, man, and he was talking to them like he was in charge. I'd like to think I would be so strong in that situation, but who knows? Richard Walker is a different breed. Well, he was."
There was no denying that, and Dan replied with a distant nod as he saw Timo and Tara coming over.
"Emma said she'll come next door in a few minutes once Rooster is settled,"
Tara explained right away. She turned to Dan.
"So, anything exciting happened with you guys since you left?"
"Clark's hurt pretty badly," Dan replied, knowing full well what Tara was getting at. "It's not that bad," Clark said.
But Tara's playful smirk faded in an instant, and her eyes widened like dinner plates when she belatedly looked at Clark and saw his misshapen nose.
"What the hell happened to you?" she shrieked.
"I lost a fight with a force field,"
Clark replied, trying to downplay it with a hint of humor and pointing towards his house to encourage Tara to start walking.
"But listen, be cool and don't say anything until we're in the basement, okay? I don't want my dad to see me like this tonight. Or at least until I can think of something to say when he asks why I look like I've just gone 12 rounds with a pissed-off silverback."
Very subtly, Timo pulled Dan back as Tara and Clark approached the front door. He kept walking at Dan's side but slowed the pace to ensure they stayed out of the other's earshot. He then leaned towards Dan and spoke quietly.
"Alessandro called when you were gone. He has a confident estimate of the perigree, which is far more precise than what he had when you left."
"Really?" Dan said, barely able to control his volume in the excitement of this revelation. "How sure is he of his analysis?"
"Alessandro is very sure, but this isn't just his analysis," Timo replied. "This has come from a very reliable friend inside the GSC's Argentine complex."
"Perfect," Dan said. Timo's expression and tone, however, were far more measured.
But that's not all that our contact told Alessandro, he said. Apparently, Chairman Godfrey has ordered his top minds to assess the relationships between recent high-profile incidents, both in terms of the phenomena themselves and also their precise locations and timings.
He's specifically looking for relationships between the locations? Dan asked, suddenly far from happy. Why?
Timo answered very bluntly, just as he and Dan stepped through the front door.
Well, Dan, it seems to me that he knows the aliens are sending us a message. Our saving grace for now is that he doesn't know anything about Lolo, but we really need to get our hands on this plaque as quickly as we can.
This perigee completes the map, Dan replied with a slow nod, wearing an expression of total focus. Now it's time to find our treasure.